Hello and welcome. My name's Chris Allen, and this podcast recorded on the 20th of November 2022, which is World Children's Day, is brought to you in association with Wolverhampton's local radio station, WCR FM. The guests are included within the show notes and the timings of the interviews, but you're going to be hearing from Joe Jackson, who founded 24 years ago Newport Village Football Development, and will be talking about the Active Through Football campaign. We'll also be hearing from Councillor Ian Brookfield on the trade delegation to India and the World Cup for Kabaddi coming to Wolverhampton. Councillor Chris Burden is the Cabinet Member for Education and Skills, and he is telling us all about the nursery rhymes in this Nursery Rhyme Week. Alex Van from Real Arts Workshop on activities for children and young people, and also the bringing out, at long last, after 8 years in the making, of his new album. Victoria Wilcox from the Beacon Centre on Festive Fun will be telling us about how you can get involved with their Christmas meals, I should say, at the Beacon Centre, and news of their fun run as well. So first of all, Joe Jackson, the manager of New Park Village Football Development, which he founded 24 years ago, I asked him to tell us about the Active Through Football campaign in which he is working with Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Basically, we've partnered with Wolves now for some time, probably about 3 or 4 years in terms of our academy football. So when I say our, that's NPB Football Development. That's our football program that we've been running for over 24 years. And so over the last sort of 3 years, Wolves have accessed six of our youngsters from the age of sort of seven through to 10 years old. And so that's really built up a real kind of link with Wolves. And then, so that's pretty much the academy part of the Wolves setup. But more recently, we've got a real good link with the foundation side, the more community side.
Yeah.
And so we have this program called Active Through Football, which is literally post the pandemic. You know, there's been a feeling of many people who are struggling with their mental health, with their health and fitness. And so between ourselves and a number of other organizations and the Wolves, we have got this football program. Well, ours is football, but there are other people who are delivering pieces of work that's not necessarily around football, but with ours is football. And this is literally just working with 18 plus, you know, our particular program is 18 to 30. But working alongside these guys and just really giving them a space where they can come together, they can build relationships. And this is right across the city. This is not in a specific area. It is taking place at Heathtown Park on a Saturday, 12:30, just for an hour. And the idea really is, it doesn't really matter what part of Wolverhampton you're from, there's a space for guys 18 plus to come and congregate and play football. And that's the initial part of what we're trying to achieve.
But it must be exciting when some of those youngsters are sort of finding their way through and they're being watched by Wolves. You've got a bit of an academy going on there, as you've had for many years as well.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, you know, as a youngster, I spent a little bit of time at Wolves myself. I was at Wolves for about 3 years when I was around sort of 16, 17. And it's always a youngster's dream. And you know, I managed to get a little bit of it. But sorry to say, I wasn't able to.
I didn't quite make it.
But, you know, football, you know, is in my blood. And I know how good it was for me. You know, it took me off. It was a great distraction for me. You know, there was a lot of young men, you know, that I used to go around with as a youngster who got caught up in stuff because they didn't really have any kind of passion, any kind of activity that they were locked into. And I was locked into football. So
is that why you started? Is that why you started 24 years ago? You started MPV. You thought it was not just about the football, but it was actually about trying to help others and trying to provide that positive distraction for some of your friends and that you'd seen.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I asked myself the question: you know, what would I have done if I wasn't playing football? You know, I did try to work in a factory once, And I lasted a week. Do you know what I mean? And I said, I just knew pretty much
Right.
that ain't gonna be it. But certainly as a kid, I just remember like 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. Kids would be going up, all over the place into town, and then back in those days, but it wasn't necessarily gangs, but it was more like football hooliganism. But from my perspective, I couldn't go because I had a football match to play. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so all these other lads would come on a Monday morning at school and come and tell us what's been going on, but I couldn't even get into it. And I think when I look back as a grown man, I realized just how important football was for me. And so for me, when I set up that football program 24 years ago, it really was about, yeah, if you're great, we can move you on into the professional levels. But at its very least, what we're going to do is create a distraction for you, and just and just really try and get you to be focused in a particular area.
And you're a person of faith as well. That's a vital part of your life too. And so do you see what you've been doing as a part of your kind of mission in life, if I put it that way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't realize at the time, I mean, I was obviously been playing football a long time, but I've not always been a person of faith. I've been a person of faith 17 years now. But I had already started our football program long before I'd become a Christian, a born again believer. And I 100% recognize that, this is a calling. I don't necessarily see it as work or anything like that. It's just what I do. Do you know what I mean? And so I think in terms of this active through football, we've always worked with the youngsters. We start our work from the age of sort of 4 years old up to 16 years of age. And then the youngster, we've never really had anything for like anybody older. Do you know what I mean? And this gives us a great opportunity to connect with young men who are sort of at that place, 18 years old. Sometimes they find themselves in a bit of a wilderness, not sure where they want to go, what they want to do. And in many respects, those are the vulnerable guys because they get caught up in gangs and get groomed and pulled into those directions. And I just felt like, this would be a fantastic opportunity to connect to some of those guys. And the other side of it is where they feel they may not necessarily have any abilities to go into the pro game or play football at those levels, maybe we can get them to become coaches.
Right. So giving them a purpose, that's the most important thing as well. Engaging, giving them a purpose, giving them a vision that's beyond perhaps, that which they could be attracted in around them.
Absolutely, absolutely, Chris.
And you've re received some funding through the City Ideas Fund, a part of the 18 to 24 campaign to get that, young people of that age range into work, get them jobs, develop them. So what are you doing with the 18 to 24-year-olds? Because that is older than you've been working with in the past, isn't it?
Yeah, and again, it was a nice little follow-on. I mean, we didn't even plan that, do you know? But yeah, so there was another program. So that's called Connect Football Leaders, and even though it's separate from the Active Through Football, it even the title Connect Football Leaders, you know what I mean, says it all, really. And so even those guys who are on the Active Through Football, if they feel that they want to try their luck at coaching, then there's a possibility for that to happen. But the Connect Football Leaders program is the Wolves at Work program that the City Council has been running, and that really is about working with people who have been unemployed, who are unemployed, and like you quite rightly said, it's 18 to 24 year olds, and so this program is for a year, and the idea really is for them, for young men or young women who fancy coaching to come, and they would basically, sometimes they don't like the regime of maybe a college or a university or an education space, but this will be more around learning on the job. So maybe a couple of times in the week they may look at some theory elements just to back up the practical, but the vast majority of the program will be about doing work experience, working in local schools, working in the evenings, working in the, on a weekend. And when we say working, it's really volunteering, it's really supporting. They will always have a lead coach who would be a peer mentor supporting them. That would be a qualified coach. But the idea really is to someone who has a passion in football, not quite sure where they want to go, find themselves in a place where maybe in part-time work and maybe they want something more, or even maybe unemployed, to literally maybe two or three times a week work alongside some qualified coaches and just pick some skills up. And then hopefully through that they may want to become a coach. And in that and so if that's the case, we then can we'll pay for qualifications and
Right.
get them organized and so on.
But even if they don't go down that route, the kind of skills for life they must be developing through all the things that they're doing in terms of communication, in terms of their confidence and all those aspects will get them job ready, won't they?
Absolutely. And sometimes, that's why we call it Connect Football Leaders, because in effect, that's what we're trying to develop. Yeah, we're doing it in the context of football. And we've got coaches, and sometimes the coaches don't realize their journeys themselves. I see coaches 18 years old managing parents, telling them parents why they haven't picked their son, and organizing referees and organizing matches with other coaches, who are sometimes double their age. And so, in a very subtle way, it's a way of sort of saying, look, we're not going to take you on a leadership program, but we're going to make you become a coach, which is really a leader. And we've seen some fantastic work and success over the years. And I feel that this will be a fantastic program as well.
And if people want to know more or get join in or parents or whatever, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can. Our website is npvfootdev.co.uk, so they can go on that, and there's some information on there. They can ring me directly on 07932 348894, or they can email us on npvfootballdevelopment@yahoo.co.uk.
That's Joe Jackson of New Park Village Football Development, and those contact details are npvfootdev.co.uk for their website, and his number 07932 348894. And if you want to email them, then it's NPV Football Development, that's all one word, npvfootballdevelopment@yahoo.co.uk. Councillor Ian Brookfield is the leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council, and he's recently been to India on a trade delegation. I asked him to tell us all about it.
Yeah, I have a second role, obviously leader of the City of Wolverhampton, but I have a second role. We have a West Midlands Combined Mayoral Authority.
Yep.
And as all the leaders have a role, and mine is the economy. And so there was a trade delegation going out to India. 9 flights in 6 days.
Oh, wow.
We crisscrossed India. The only thing I got to see was India Gate for about 15 minutes, which was nice. But it was important that we got to speak to people like Tata, really high up in the organisation.
Yeah.
And it was important because they've had some issues recently nationally. And so there were worries there, so we went out to see them. And of course, Andy Street, the mayor, is able to take that message back to national government. We also went out to see a lot of stuff to do with electrification. So big motorbike companies,
right.
The people who bought Norton motorcycles.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and they've set up a factory in Solihull. So we saw them. And some of the national aeroplane carriers, because what we're looking for is more direct flights to the West Midlands, to BHX Birmingham from India. And fingers crossed, we're looking for some good announcements in the upcoming months. So all in all, decent for the West Midlands.
Right.
But of course, I also had
an eye open for the
I had world. I had a little eye open for something that was potentially on the cards. And that's the Kabaddi World Cup. And for people, a lot of people, of course, in our region will know what Kabaddi is. But for anybody who doesn't, if you can imagine, I don't know, British Bulldog or Tick on steroids, that's what it's like. And there was actually more people who watched the Kabaddi League last year than watched the English Premier League.
There you go.
In this country, it's a huge thing. And we started off in Wolverhampton. Why? We've got a link. We've got a team. And we held the very first UK-wide league game in Wolverhampton. So anyway, we got it.
You got it. So
we got the World Cup.
When's that?
Well, it's the first ever time the World Cup has left India.
Right.
So it's February 25.
Right, okay.
So you will see a build-up. It's not like the Football World Cup that we have to build stadiums. We've already got the stadiums in place. It's an indoor game.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got the Aldersley, which can hold several thousand people. And similar, you know, Birmingham will have the same, Coventry, etc. So,
yeah, yeah, exciting.
Stuff. I'm over the moon. The moon.
Well, because... you look good in the kit. I saw the picture. You know, yourself with the mayor of the West Midlands behind you, and you these weapons you have.
I got tackled by three 12-year-old girls. It wasn't the greatest bit of diplomacy I've ever done. But no, it was.
It's great.
It was good fun and really important, actually.
And then really another high profile sporting event coming to the city obviously helps tourism. And the like.
Trade. And that's right, because alongside that, you are talking tourism and you're talking trade as well. So we'll be running joint trade shows with the Indian authorities who we signed up memorandums of understanding with. So the sport opens the door for us to talk and share best practice and share opportunities on both sides. It's a two-way, perhaps in the old days it never used to be, but it's a two-way process. We both want to benefit from those opening trade opportunities.
And going back to that, is that trade delegation arising partly out of Brexit, obviously looking for new markets, but also more devolution coming down to a different region so the West Midlands becomes a bit more autonomous?
Well, yeah, it is, because what we've had, obviously nationally, you've always had these trade delegations, etc. But as part of this devolution, it's going to be much more West Midlands focused in our case. Manchester are also going through the same process as us with this trailblazer. And, you know, we've been poorly served for foreign and direct investments over the past and innovation funding. It's always been southern based. You know, we know that. But it's finally hitting home that it is perhaps too lopsided. And so as part of that is being able to manage our own links with big areas, you know, North America, Eurasia, all these areas. And so it is part and parcel. And of course, what really helped was that the Commonwealth Games, you know, that really opened the door.
Showcase what the region can do.
Well, it did. And that brought with it, I think, 1,200 leads and links that have to be followed up. People who came over really enjoyed the area, really enjoyed what we do, and we're really happy to talk to businesses. And so utilising sports is fantastic. We all love a bit of sport. But utilising sport, not just for the sake of having sports, you know, get those links, get those jobs, get that money flowing.
Obviously, a couple, you know, exciting thing in the city we'll come back to in a moment or two, but also the lighthouse, almost a fixture of the city. What's the latest you know in terms of where it's at?
It's a slightly difficult story to tell. The council own the cinema bit, just the cinema bit.
Right.
Everything else, which was the cafe, bar, balcony area, is owned by the Midland Industrial Association. Don't ask me why. If this happens in the very, very early 90s.
Right.
And unfortunately, obviously due to COVID, etc., the patronage has dropped, I think, by about 40%.
Right.
And they owed a hell of a lot of money to Midland Industrial Association. Not to us, because we gave the cinema bit rent-free.
Right.
Always have done.
Yeah.
We were the biggest funders. Anyway, so the company's gone bust. Let's make absolutely no qualms about that. And it's going through that process now when a company goes bust. As a council, we are not allowed to give public money away for debts of other companies. That's just not allowed. The auditors wouldn't allow it. The lawyers wouldn't allow it, etc. But what we can say is already we're in talks with three organisations who want to look at, take over the cinema bit.
Right.
The other side is that'll be a commercial decision, etc. For the cinema bit.
So this is you've been in a position to try to bring people together to save the bit that the council's always supported.
Yeah. So the lighthouse, it's my intention to reopen that lighthouse. I don't think lighthouse is a trading name, so it'll probably always be called the lighthouse, etc. But we're already talking to three organisations. Not housing. I know you get strange comments on the social media. No, we're not. It will be used for essentially, exclusively for arts and culture, cinema, etc. And so we're in discussions right now. Two Wolverhampton ones, one Birmingham one. Can't tell you any more than that.
Do you know when that whole process might conclude? Well, where people
two things.
Know it's gonna work
two things.
Not?
I'm looking for months rather than years. Of course. The lawyer bit about the previous company is still there, so that has to be worked through to make sure everything's clean and tidy for the next group of people to come in. So months, that's what I'm hoping for. Certainly there'll be no bar on our part. We're not standing in the way. We want that reopened as soon as possible, but it clearly wasn't. It's an unsustainable model that the previous one had. It owes huge amounts of finances, losing a lot of
But a phoenix money. May arise.
A phoenix will arise.
Yeah.
A phoenix will arise. So that's good, because there's a lot of feeling out there. It's quite right. It's been around 36 years. Pandemic hit the audience. So that's got to be built up again, because at the level it was at, it was losing money hand over fist week after week. So certain changes, new organisation. Let's
and I know you'll let us know first.
Oh, absolutely will.
We'll get it out there for people. And the Civic Hall is getting closer. June, you know, it's all coming along the road.
Well, it is, isn't it? And it's the beauty of that. I mean, it is June when the company starts running the big shows, and they're starting to sell tickets now. And I believe every 2 weeks there'll be an announcement. It takes them that long to sell tickets and get involved in people's tours. There will be test events much earlier.
Okay.
So we'll get to hear about the test events. And, of course, that's to make sure everything goes swimmingly with large crowds and the organisation. So they'll be very early spring. We're not hoping. There's going to be something for our school kids before the end of this year to get some of our school kids in and some of our partners in to have a look. It's not going to be a huge sellout thing, but it's just to show people the facilities we have, which are absolutely fantastic.
That's Councillor Ian Brookfield, the leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council. Councillor Chris Burton is a Cabinet Member for Education, Skills and Work on the City Council. And as it was International Children's Day, I asked him to join me, and I put it to him what an important day it was.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you look at the last, it's an important day anyway, but if you look at the last few years, kids have had a rough time of it at the end of the day. And it's sort of that recognising thing is kids getting along with each other and actually having time to be kids. Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing we sometimes forget about. Kids need to have time to just be children and get things wrong and learn.
And that was one of the things during lockdown, wasn't it? And children not going to schools, yes, getting behind with education. And we know that those who perhaps are more behind, getting further behind. But it was that lack of socialising, that lack of running around, having fun, hugging and all the stuff that kids do.
Yeah, I think it's the hugging. It's the finding friends, learning how to make friends, learning the things you like, not just the thing your parents like. And you know, it's the silly things. It's the falling over and scraping your knee. They had less of it. And now they're having to do it when they're older, and it's harder to deal with and harder to deal with those emotions because they haven't had that time to learn.
Now, I noticed that you'd been down at some schools this week because it is World Nursery Rhyme Week, and had some fun with them. And I wondered if there were any new nursery rhymes around.
Do you know what? I'd wondered that myself. But do you know what? They're singing all they're just doing the old classics. They're still going. And I looked into it. They're all from like the 1700s. And I didn't know that until World Nursery Rhyme Week. One of the teachers in nursery told me, yeah, this is from 1787. It's like, it's kind of mind-blowing that they're still going.
Yeah,
and the kids are still loving them and enjoying them. They're still relevant, so there.
Yeah, well, my co-host for the 7 till 10 show this morning, Debbie, was sort of, she was intrigued by this and was looking at, and she found Pattycake goes back to 1698. So there you go.
You've won up to me on the 1787 there. But yeah, no, exactly. They're really old and they're part of British culture. They're a particularly British thing, but you know, every country's got an equivalent. So they're clearly important and they're clearly loved, do you know what I mean?
And they help children, don't they, learn about, you know, word sounds, language and the like.
Yeah, so this is sort of my nerdy thing. I was a language teacher and they have them in every language, teaching them rhymes, teaching them phonics. It goes on to teach them how to spell later on, and actually they're really important things. And one of the most important things is it's sitting on your parents' knee and singing them with them. It's that early communication skill that we need kids to have if we want them to be successful adults. It really starts that early.
Do you have a favourite?
I'm going to be really boring and go for a Humpty Dumpty or Incy Wincy Spider.
Oh, I'm an Incy Wincy Spider. I think the determination in Incy Wincy Spider is staggering, really.
Well, no, exactly. I'd have given up long since.
No, so, and you know, they're really, really important. And you're clearly having some good fun with them as well. And it's great, as you know, the pictures I saw really with the smiles on the children's faces and the teachers, obviously yourself as well, there, that the joy that can sit around simple little rhymes.
Yeah, these kids were sitting down. And when I walked into the classroom, they were mid-singing their one. And everyone was joining in. Everyone was smiling. Everyone was enjoying it. And they're learning in a fun way. And I think that's a really underrated thing that we don't do with our kids, sort of let them have fun. And that is a great way for them to learn.
Now, tied in with that a little bit is this opportunity for now for parents to apply for reception class places for 2023. Deadline is in 15th of January, but the message is always do it now or you'll forget. Tell us a little bit about that.
But it's exactly that. You've nailed on what I wanted to say there. The deadline is the 15th of January. That seems like a really long time away, but once it hits December and you're doing your Christmas shopping and you're planning everything, you'll immediately forget and suddenly it'll be the 1st of January. It's an online process this year, wolverhampton.gov.uk/admissions. It's really simple. It'll take you 5 minutes to do one of the most important things, one of the most important decisions for your child's life. It's a really great thing to do. Get it done now. Go and do it now. It's my message on this one. If you struggle with the online portal, you can email the school's admissions team or ring them on the normal council number and there'll be support in place.
That's 01902 551 112 if you need to ring. But and again, preschool opportunities are really valuable because so many patterns are set in the earliest stages of a child's life.
Yeah, and it gets them used to routine and used to learning in that safe environment. And I think one of the things we noticed after COVID was the kids that didn't have that exposure started to struggle when it got on. So get them in there, get their space. There are enough spaces for everyone. We're running an excess of spaces, but make sure you get the school you want and get that application in.
That's Councillor Chris Burden, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Education and Skills and Work. And yes, get your applications in for reception class places. Go to wolverhampton.gov.uk/admissions. If you want a number to ring, then it's Wolverhampton 551 112. That's 551 112. Alex Fan and his partner Gary O'Dowd run Real Arts Workshops. They came and joined me in the studio. Always a fascinating sight because Gary is profoundly deaf and Alex includes Gary in all the conversations by signing to him. And I put it to Alex that actually inclusion was a really important part of their work. Yeah?
Yes, that's right.
And Gary, what's Gary saying to you?
Gary's saying it's good to include BSL, so British Sign Language. We quite often, because obviously we're an arts business more than anything else, but we include some BSL and the children really love it. You know, they really pick it up quickly and they enjoy doing something, you know, that's physical but also expressive, using body language, which is really important, and facial expressions. And also like to explain about what it's like to be a deaf person and why the language is important to them and the difference between English language and the sign language.
No, I'm always sitting here mouth agog because, you know, I think when we were in lockdown, trying to learn a bit of sign language, I think I've now forgotten it all to my shame. But no, it is incredibly proud. But also, it is International Children's Day, World Children's Day, and that aspect of inclusion so vital, making sure that whatever barriers are can be removed if possible.
Absolutely. So we work with a lot of children in our line of work, obviously, with the various HAF schemes and the YES schemes as well. And quite often people will have ASD or ADHD, other learning disabilities, autism. So we have like a range of a sort of varied program of different creative activities that, you know, keep young people engaged and away from devices, you know, away from TVs and phones and computer games. It's just like good, honest, creative activities that we think really important. And also children are making new friends and are bonding, you know, making relationships. That's really important as well.
Well, International Children's Day is about children becoming aware of each other, and obviously the activities you can get them doing together builds those relationships, as you were saying, and sets seeds for the future, doesn't it, in terms of understanding between human beings?
Absolutely, yeah. So a lot of the work that we do, sometimes we'll do a project that involves teamwork, you know, so they'll have to work together. Well, the example is when we do a large artwork which is done in different sections, so each will have a square, and it doesn't make any sense when they do their particular square, but when you put it on the wall and you join them all together, it creates like a huge image, sometimes linked to sort of pop art, perhaps like an Andy Warhol piece. So they're learning about art, and also they're learning, like I say, about teamwork, working together. And that sense afterwards of achieving something, you know, and it gives them a sense of confidence, where quite often they'll, on the first day of a scheme, perhaps they're a little bit nervous or thinking, I can't do that, or mum's told me to go to this club, but, you know, I'm not really sure what it's about. And then they do something enjoyable and they create some artwork, and it makes them, you know, feel a sense of achievement.
Right, you're going to be doing some stuff over the Christmas holidays, over in WV10 area, I believe. What have you got on there?
That's right, yes. Yeah. So we're working with the WV10 Consortium, who are a great group in that area. We're pleased to be working at Big Venture Centre in the first week of the Christmas holidays. So we're doing some activities there, 10 till 2 each day. So again, that'll probably be like a varied programme of different work, and probably linked to Christmas, some Christmas activities, things that, you know, they'll find enjoyable, I think they can take home as well, gifts that they can make for family members, that sort of thing.
Now, ever since I've first known you, I think you're one of the first people I ever interviewed when I was at WCRFM about, 4 years ago now. You talked about, you know, I knew you did music, and you kept talking about an album. One day I'm going to get this album out, one day. And that day has arrived after 7 years.
Yeah. Wow. I think it's more like eight.
Is that right?
It's been a labour of love. I've really enjoyed doing it most of the time. But it's there now. Like you say, it's been a dream for a long time to get these songs, which were quite fragmented, really. They're in different projects, or they're not connected. And I thought it'd be really nice to put them all together in one place on an album. And I'm quite old-fashioned. I like CDs. But it's available for download as well. But not just working on my own, but working with different musicians as well, different singers, because I think it was nice to get other people involved in your projects, so it's not just all about you. Working with the band, so I've got live drummer, bass players. So my bass playing is really just put a root note on, just keep the, you know, bottom end there. But you get a bass player that writes a part, it makes a world of difference.
Right.
And we're really lucky to work with Rich and Martin on their bass work, and then Nick on the drums. Really great musicians. I'm so pleased with the album. I went to M2 Studios, which is in Coven, so just north of Wolverhampton.
Right.
And Mark and Sheena there have done a fantastic job. I'm really pleased.
No, I've had a listen through to it. It is a great album. And it's so many stories in there of your journey in life.
Yeah, exactly. So it's quite personal, a lot of autobiographical songs in there, and songs about other people and about places as well. I mean, there's a song about Sneed, for example, which is a big local area in Warsaw. Did some work there, wrote a song about that area. yeah, songs about my own life as well. There's a song about my mum on there, for example, which is obviously deeply personal. But I'm hoping people will listen to it and see a bit of themselves as well in each of the songs. I think that's really important, that you make that connection with audiences and it's not just you, you know, doing something very eclectic or very unusual, but something that people can relate to. It's, again, it's about accessibility, you know, and including people as well, which is really important to me.
And I suppose one of my main questions is, who's Charlie Grigg?
Charlie Grigg is, or was, an artist, and he lived in the Black Country. He worked in a factory for most of his life, but he'd always dreamt of being an artist. And one day the opportunity came to send some artwork to DC Thompson's, the publishers up in Dundee. They used to do, or they still do, the Beano and the Dandy comics, which I suppose are the most well-known titles. Lots of other things as well. And he actually became the artist of Corky the Cat and Desperate Dan. I mean, people my age will remember that.
Indeed.
And, yeah, so he would work from home in the Black Country in a bedroom upstairs, post them off. And they did in those days, you know, actually like physical drawings. They'd get coloured by somebody up in Scotland and then produced in the comics. But nobody knew that he was doing this. You know, the kids that were buying the comics would walk past his house totally unaware that the guy that was drawing them was upstairs. A few years ago, I got involved in a project that was about sort of raising more awareness about who he was and his importance in that area. You know, that is, the area should be very proud of who he is, you know. And so we've got a blue plaque. I did some songs, wrote two songs about him. Emma Pursehouse did a poem as well. And other people got involved in the project doing poetry, spoken word, stories. And we did a little tour, raised a bit of money, enough money to purchase this blue plaque, which is now on the school where he used to go to.
That's Alex Van with his partner Gary O'Dowd from Real Arts Workshops. Now, if you want to register for holiday activities, then you need to be quick because the closing date is Wednesday the 23rd of November. And if you want to get involved, then you email HAF, that's HAF, at wolverhampton.gov.uk. And if you're listening past that particular date, then I'm sorry you've missed the boat on that one. But you can always find out what's going on by going to yowolves.co.uk. And if you're interested in Gary's album, then go to www.alexvan.net and you can find all the information there. Victoria Wilcox is the Executive Support Manager at Beacon Vision. They've got a lot of events coming along. They seem to have lots of Fs involved in terms of friends and family and festive and fun and food. I asked her to tell us what they were up to.
Yeah, so it's one of our, you know, biggest events that we hold every year at Beacon, obviously bar the brief period in COVID. So there are Christmas community lunches at the Beacon Centre in Sedgley. So you'll be served up with a three-course meal, welcome drink, and mince pies and coffee to end it all. But this year we've also got some fantastic festive-themed entertainment. Some local, some actual international bands we've
Whoa.
Got. So, yeah, come along, you can.
You're making me hungry talking about that. Actually, I was just thinking, well, it's 2:15, you know, I haven't done my lunch yet. So it's sounding really good. And so these are really important events for you. And you mentioned COVID there. I know it was a really difficult time for Beacon, like many charities, yeah. And you lost a lot of money through that. Are you sort of beginning to get back on your feet now?
Yeah, we're getting there. We're certainly getting there. You know, we're trying to host as many events as we can with a small team. We've actually got the Santa Run coming up on the 4th of December.
Yep.
I mean, we call it Santa Run, but if you do want to walk, that's absolutely fine. And that's local. That's over in West Park. Fun for all the family, that is. You can even bring your dogs for £3.
There you go.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic. And obviously we've got the annual forget-me-not service. So that's really just to remember any loved ones that have been lost. Come to the centre, you know, have a mince pie, have a glass of mulled wine, and just think about those people that you've lost.
And you know, it was a privilege on before you actually had Gary O'Dowd in the studio here, profoundly deaf, with his partner Alex. So Alex is always, he mesmerises me because he's sort of trying to talk, he's signing to Gary at the same time, and they're involving Gary in the conversation. And you take for granted, we take for granted what we have in terms of hearing and sight, don't we? Yeah. Many, many people will be affected by sight loss in their lives.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, but Beacon, you know, we're obviously there to support and help. You know, we our lifestyle and engagement teams, we run a range of activities that take place throughout the week at our centre. And we've actually launched some new community-based activity. And it's really just picking up where people have lost the confidence to go out. You know, maybe they love swimming, maybe they like playing golf. Maybe they like riding their bike and they've lost that ability now and that skill, and they want to build the confidence back up to go out there and do that again, and that's what we're there for.
And I noticed there that you've got a list of what the donations that people could give to you, what they pay for, and a donation of just £3 pays for 15 minutes support for someone newly diagnosed with sight loss, because that must be an incredibly frightening moment for them, and that confidence building is something that you can offer.
Yeah, we're a lifeline really, and obviously it's such a shame when somebody gets diagnosed, because it's kind of, there's your diagnosis, there's nothing else, there is no pathway, but we're here to provide that pathway and get you back on track and give you that confidence that you need.
When I went shopping yesterday and popping into the supermarket, there were some people there, puppy walkers, who were there. Mm-hmm. And you can't help, go and have a cuddle of the dog and put a few pounds in the pot to help it again. So you, I suppose that's just one aspect of beginning to give some people hope and different ways of working. But what you offer there is so immense for so many people, and so many of us are affected by it.
Yeah. We really are, yeah.
Now, these lunches, you've got them coming up on December 13th, 14th, 15th, 20th, 21st and 22nd. So people have got to book them in advance, though, haven't they?
Yes, if they could. I mean, if they can contact our main line, so that's 01902 880 111, or drop us an email at inquiries@beaconvision.org and we'll get that booked in for you.
And the same for the Santa Fun Run or Santa Fun Walk, or this, as I'm on crutches at the moment, it'd be the Santa Run Stagger in my case as well. But again, that's a number.
Yeah, of course. Or jump on the website and all the details are there for you.
That's Beacon Vision's Executive Support Manager, Victoria Wilcox. And if you want to know more about booking the meals, then you can call them 01902 880 111, or you can email inquiries@beaconvision.org. And if you go to their website, you can find out all about the Santa Fun Run as well, and how you might be able to give some really important funding to Beacon Vision that can make such a difference in people's lives. That's it from me for this week's podcast. I'll be back on WCRFM next Sunday between 7 and 10 for Rise and Shine, then from midday till 2 on Chris Allen in Conversation, with all the latest news for our city, where you can catch up with your local radio station, WCRFM, the number one for Wolverhampton.